Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
You are listening to the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Snapchat, and Instagram at High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Facebook at High Spot Podcast. And also follow us on our brand spanking new website, highspotpodcast.com. I am Jeff Martin alongside the trendsetter Brian Berga. We are in Wrestle Pro Week, also recapping Hell in a Cell, as well as the latest WWE and also news around the world professional wrestling. What's up, buddy? How you doing, man?
I am excited, man. It's like literally we're in the pinnacle of WrestlePro weekend now. It's like a special event, and we're excited that we're going to be with them for the rest of the year of 2017.
Exactly. We're going to be with WrestlePro the rest of the year, so that's something we're looking forward to. Friday the 13th, barbed wire match between Dan Moth
Pat Buck. Friday the 13th,
what
Jeff?
Is Pat Buck doing, man?
I have no idea, but you know what? He can't get out of it now. He's going to be stuck in barbed wire with Danny Moth. You know, I'd rather deal with barbed wire than Danny Moth right now, so.
So lots to talk about there.
But guys, don't forget also to check out iTunes as well. Jeff mentioned all the great social media outlets out there. iTunes as well. Leave a mark, a comment, subscribe. Please subscribe, because that's the way we can get the ideas and comments from you guys of what you like. How do you like it? What guests do you want to have on? We do everything for you guys because we love your support. We love you for following us from this point on, reaching 100 episodes, close to it. Can't wait for that 100th episode. It's going to be exciting. So just subscribe, link, follow us. Tell your friends, hey, listen to the High Spot Podcast. You love wrestling, then you're going to love our show. So Jeff, I just wanted to mention that to the audience as well too, because again, we're approaching 100 episodes, kind of a little sentimental there, but again, it's really exciting right now, time for not only WrestlePro but right now a wrestling fan.
Exactly. So like Brian said, leave a 5-star review, leave a comment, also
leave a 6-star review.
6 stars, like a Dave Meltzer, 6 stars.
There you go.
But again, though, spread the word, the Jersey Wrecking Crew and High Spot Podcast, trying to give you the best wrestling podcast available. WrestlePro weekend, but right now we got to talk about some huge news. And first and foremost, also, let me begin by thanking Mark Adam Haggerty of B Plus Player
Radio
Network. Yes,
thank you so much.
And also the Fans Podcast for their support. So we thank them, and we do that also to pay some bills. And now we are talking about...
Can make that money, money.
We can talk about reuniting. It feels so good because it was reunion week with WWE. But let's talk about the latest news and the buzz, and that is the Neville saga, which you can say a saga, but something that happened on Monday night. Actually, walking out of Monday Night Raw, because whether it's displeasure with his position, whether it's the nasty, hideous shirt that was put on WWEshop.com, or whether it was having to drop the ball, whether drop the cruiserweight title to Enzo, whatever it is. Neville walked out on Monday night, and now rumors are swirling. What's going on? Is WWE going to give him his release? Did he ask for his release? Your thoughts on the situation of what you heard, what you read?
Listen, man, I'm not taking a shot at Neville at all, all right? But like, I've been frustrated with certain things that I've done, and I've wanted to walk out of my job because I've just been so frustrated. I hate it. Every single time I get there, I'm like, I'm just waiting for that one person to say the remark. I'm going to leave and explode on everybody. But I hold back because I feel there always needs to be a sense of professionalism. I'm not saying Neville's not professional, but at the same time, you have to also look at the fact that it must have been so bad for him, so much pent-up frustration and anger, that it was that bad that he couldn't just deal with it for that week that he initially walked out. So for me, it's like you're wondering both sides of the story here, what's really the situation. You never know, but I always kind of side with the talent because the talent right now is dealing with a lot of frustration. You look at a guy like Neville who's revamped himself from injury, has done a great job, has been an anchor and a staple for that cruiserweight division. And the way the cruiserweight division has been handled hasn't been great. And you could just kind of tell the frustration that of was building up eventually. And this happening, it's sad for me as a fan, Jeff, to see it because I love Neville so much. But again, at the same time, if that's what's best for him, he's got to do what he's got to do.
And of course, we were talking about before, Cody Rhodes kind of put the template out there of betting on yourself.
Yeah, he did.
And I think a lot of wrestlers kind of looked at that and were like, hey, listen, man, look at the Hot Topic shirts, Ring of Honor, New Japan. You know, there is life after WWE. Do you think more wrestlers now are going to follow suit and try to ask for the release? Because listen, man, WWE right now has shown, especially with the Young Bucks and Bullet Club have shown, WWE is not the end-all be-all.
I hate to say it, but I kind of hope so. And that might sound bad for the WWE, but you know what? I hope so because it just creates more competition. And you know what? For the first time, it's nice to see the talent kind of take some control because they're being dictated. But back to your point, though, with like an example like Cody Rhodes, which is a great example, Jeff, he bet on himself. He had enough confidence with himself. I'm sure Neville has that same confidence with himself that he could venture life, and there is life, believe it or not, guys, outside the WWE bubble. But I'm not sure a lot of talent out there, depending on the individual, have that same type of belief in themselves, which you can clearly see because they're just content to go on superstars. They're content just to be in the back at catering, and we've heard great things about catering. So I can only imagine they just want to enjoy the ride for as long as they last and have that brand that I am a WWE superstar.
Yeah, some people are just satisfied with that, and that's fine. But you, for example, if you're a wrestler and you bet on yourself and you know that you can't go elsewhere where you know that you want to be world champion, like, yeah. Listen, being world champion means... it has different meaning to people. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Listen, because we know what it means, right? But you want to be a world champion. You know you can't be here. But if you go out there and bet on yourself, you can be someplace else. Is that enough for you to want to go out there and venture off on yourself? Because if you leave the right way here, I don't know how Neville's going to leave it, whether it's good terms or bad terms. But you can always circle around and come back. I just think it's kind of, to me, I guess
slap in the face, an insult,
it's
disrespect.
It's something where the WWE is an indictment on them that they have to make a name for themselves someplace else when they're already here. You know, I mean, instead of focusing on the Brons and the Romans and the Brocks all the time, to focus on those guys and give them something. So, would you want that dream of being world champion, or would you just be satisfied to be under the WWE name?
Well, Jeff, if it was me, it's kind of different. You know why? Because the thoughts and dreams of world champion, and here, like, let's not be naive to think this, too. Every single person we talk about, from whether we're talking to people at WrestlePro or Pro Wrestling Magic or any independent promotion out there, their dream growing up as a wrestling fan is WWE. They want to be there. Yeah. They want to be a world champion. Yeah, yeah. If you don't want to be a world champion in this business, I feel personally myself, then you really have no business to be in this business. But at the same time, sometimes when you reach that goal or your supposed dream, it's not everything you expected to be or everything you thought it was going to be. And I think that's kind of what we're dealing with now, for the fact that everybody wants to go to WWE, but sometimes maybe that's not the best route. So for me, ultimately for me, if I was in Neville's situation and I was in his shoes right now, my biggest thing is I just want to be happy, because ultimately Neville, somebody like him, has done all this around the world, which was good enough to get him signed by WWE, and now they can't do anything with him. And you're miserable at work, and then you start hating something you love, that's a big problem.
When you should get out.
That's when you should get out. Not get out of the business, but get out of what you're currently in situation that you're in. And for a guy like Neville, with all his experience, all the confidence he has of what he can do in the ring, I'm sure he can bet on himself and say, you know what? I really, as much as I wanted to be part of WWE, I don't really need this right now. I can go be happy somewhere else. And in this case, I can still live out my dream to the equivalent of somebody like you mentioned, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega, who've proven that you could be a success and have never gone to WWE if that's the case.
It's basically all about now having a WrestleMania moment, if that really matters to you. Because besides that,
it's true.
I mean, you can make money now in the independents. So if you take a look at it too, in the finality of the things, WWE is going to end up missing Neville more. I think at the end of the day, they don't realize what they had. And then also, too, I think, take a look. Austin Aries, Neville, two guys that were on the Cruiserweight division, now wanting to leave. It's a huge indictment on WWE. But now we've got the reunion. Reunited, and it feels so good. But before we get to that, Nolan Harris will join us. Character extraordinaire artist from Over the Line Art. He is just amazing. He has
That's great. That's a great website.
Yeah, it is awesome. It is.
I mean, I checked it out. His Instagram, it's great. I mean, like, we've had Rob Schamberger on the show, and I didn't mean to cut you off there, Jeff, but just like the artwork is so impressive that, you know, you'll hear Jeff talk about, you know, I kind of do it a little bit too. It takes a lot of work and practice to do what he does, and it's so very well thought out and detailed.
Yeah, so we're going to hear from him and get to know a little bit more of the wrestling fanatic too that he is. He loves WWE.
Aren't we all?
And he puts both his passion for that, for art and WWE, on paper, on a canvas. So we were going to be so fortunate to be joined by Nolan Harris on the show this week. But now the reunited, and it feels so good, week for WWE, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Dude, man, that Hell in a Cell match was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wondering if it was too long or not. But still, the thing is, Sami Zayn finally turned, was finally taken lightly, you know, and said no more. And then helps out Kevin Owens. And now we have this brotherhood now of two guys reunited who've been each other's, you know, best men, who've been there for each other. And now they are now going to, I guess, tag team or something like that. What did you think of Hell in a Cell?
Well, I don't know what ultimately they're going to do, but something that definitely, they're not just best friends, Jeff. They're brothers.
Yeah.
That's what they made perfectly clear. And for me, it's like, this is the kind of situation, Jeff, where I don't really need Sami Zayn to explain why he did what he did. If you follow the product well enough and you follow basically Sami Zayn, you're fans of him and Kevin Owens, you know the history. It's there. It's been documented well since they came to WWE when they were in NXT. If you want to see more of it, go get Kevin Owens' DVD or Blu-ray, whatever you want of his story. Free plug there for Kevin Owens. It makes so much sense in terms of frustration, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to it. How many times, Jeff, do you and I get up every day, right, and think, oh, we're just going to bust our butt and our hard work's going to get paid off, and people are going to notice it, and we're going to get everything we want because we're going to do it the right way. We're not going to backstab anybody. We're not going to be vindictive or any of those negative things to get to the top. We're going to do it the right way. And I hate to use the moniker, too. A nice guy's finished last, but that's a scenario where Sami Zayn's like, you know what, Kevin? As much as I despise you for supposedly turning your back on me, you were right. And that's true. And it's something you can definitely relate to.
He saw the light.
Yeah, he saw the light. And the light was brought by his best friend, brother, Kevin Owens. So it's such a relatable story. And it's so relatable why Sami Zayn did what he did. So when everybody's like, he has to give an explanation, no, he doesn't. Because we already know what the explanation is going to be. They didn't care about him. He wasn't given opportunities, and he was an afterthought in Shane McMahon's mind.
So that was probably the highlight of SmackDown, and we all were wondering why Sami Zayn. So he gave us his reason. So it'll be interesting to see what exactly happens going forward. But now you have that dynamic. Then now Sami Zayn has Kevin Owens, so it's going to be interesting. Going to make for good TV. Hopefully, help SmackDown, you know, get back from the kind of like, I guess, repetitiveness that it was going through for a long time. But now you got the Shield reunion, and you know everyone loved it. Got over 3 million views and still going on YouTube. I think me and you, the issue is whether the timing of it, whether the timing is right for them to reunite. But a lot of people love it. They're down for it. They've wanted this. The cheers are crazy. And it's the only chance you have to cheer Roman Reigns because that's the only way that he gets cheered, when you put Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins next to him.
Listen, Jeff, I'm not going to be naive or stupid enough specifically to come on the show, Jeff, and tell you how this is the wrong thing to do. You shouldn't be doing this. I mean, what do I know? And I'm sure I would have to revoke my wrestling card back to people, and they would probably ban you. Would probably ban me from the High Spot podcast. It makes sense. I get it from a business standpoint. For me, my biggest gripe is, yeah, timing's one thing because, you know, all of us always want to wait for that perfect moment. Sometimes that perfect moment never happens. For me, the biggest thing is, does it make sense? But it makes sense in this aspect of it, though. In terms of storyline, it doesn't make sense. And I don't know how somebody could try to reason it with me. I won't get it. But it makes sense in this sense. That's so funny how I said that. But the main thing has been everybody's building up to Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. That's going to be the WrestleMania main event, supposedly in New Orleans, right? And they want so badly for Roman Reigns to get cheered because it just sounds bad on TV. So what are you going to do? His biggest cheers were when he was a part of the Shield. As soon as he separated from him, that's when they started booing him, disliking him. So now he's part of the Shield. Again, the crowd's actually cheering him. They actually join him and goes, ooh, ah, type of thing. It's working, and if that's the premise of why you're doing it, then yes, it does make sense. And hey, merchandise, the kids are going to love it, the women are going to love it, even the crowd's going to love it. I'm going to get those new Hounds for Justice t-shirts. Great, great idea, and it all works. Just, it doesn't make sense for me, being a hardcore fan that I am. Why would you do it? If you're doing it just to make Roman Reigns a more likable character, then yeah, you did your job, but it kind of leaves me kind of empty with the whole scenario.
Yeah, plus let's face it, TLC, you're going to have no Brock Lesnar, no John Cena, so you need something to put an ass in the seat. And you know what? Whether the timing is it now or should it be 6 months from now?
But do you think
now
that was the reason behind it, for that? Oh, it covering up for Lesnar and Cena, or because they want to make Roman Reigns a more likable character?
I agree with you to an extent, but I think right now they realize, hey, listen, we got a TLC pay-per-view. We don't want to put a lot of tarp on this arena. And we just want to, you know, we actually want to have people.
Come on, man.
What a crazy thought.
With all technology, they can't put CGI in there and put people in the audience.
No, that would just look hideous, man. But, yeah, I really think it's a little bit of both. But I think it's more like maybe 70-30 that they're worried about this card here for TLC. They got to have something. And it's going to be The Shield versus Braun Strowman, The Miz, and Sheamus and Cesaro. So, listen.
Well, you're right, because they've never taken pay-per-views off before.
Let's just take three guys here and bury four guys here. I mean, it would suck if Braun Strowman were to take the pin, but I kind of feel like The Miz is going to, you know, take the abuse mostly.
Sure, why not? You've buried the guy long enough. It's not going to hurt him to get pinned again.
And listen, I owe you Buffalo Wings.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if I can have any more. Like, we've been doing this thing now, Jeff and I, where, like, on Sundays, now we watch
wings
the NFL,
and
we have wings and pizza.
And then the first thing you thought of for a bet was wings. So that was kind of your fault, bro, because now you have a whole, you're going to have 75 wings in front of your face, and I'm going to be there watch you eat them all because you beat me fair and square in our Hell in a Cell predictions.
Well, it's no problem. I'll eat them all, but I'm saying I think it's getting a little overboard with Jeff and I, where now it's kind of a routine, because by the end of week 16 or week 17 in the NFL, I'm going to be like I'm like 250 now. I'm going to be like 320, and that's not the good kind of weight. That's going to be pretty
what
massive,
a way
though.
To go.
Yes, you know, if I'm going to go, Jeff, I might as well go with a smile. Because a lot of people, you know, have to deal with worse off to, you know, to go and meet their maker. I'm doing it eating buffalo wings and pizza. So, you know what? Bring them on, Jeff. I can't wait. I like them extra spicy, by the way. And you have to eat them with me.
Okay, so I'll take 5 and you take the other 70. But Hell in a Cell in general, to me, if I'm going to use one sentence, and everyone's, I guess, going to have the same feeling.
That was
that's
mine.
What you think?
That was my thing.
I think that it was about the two matches. I think it was about the New Day and the Usos, which we thought would steal the show, and then also Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon. A lot of other matches kind of like underwhelmed. Bobby Roode, Dolph Ziggler. A lot of one left us head scratching, like Natalya and Charlotte. But to me, it's going to be about those two matches, those two Hell in a Cell matches. And if there's one thing I want to say about Shane McMahon is you're crazy. And listen,
he already knows that
you can't do any more on the Hell in a Cell, really. I mean, I think next year they should scrap it. They should really, you know, make this not maybe something where it takes a year off, because what more can you do in Hell in a Cell? It just kind of loses its meaning, you know? So I think hopefully next year they go away from Hell in a Cell and they save it for a very, very special occasion. So
I wish they went away from, you know, naming pay-per-views after matches. I think that's
gimmicks.
Something, you know, gimmicks. I think that's really, we have Money in the Bank. We have TLC. We have Hell in a Cell. I think one time we had Elimination Chamber. Enough's enough. Like, you're right. Like, the thing with Elimination Chamber, though, I know you're not a fan of it, though, but, you know, if you haven't seen it in a while, it's cool to see it. And you're right. I think doing Hell in a Cell as a pay-per-view every single time now, you kind of loses its luster.
It's just
There's
funny.
There's only so much you can do.
It's funny to me because WWE talks about budget cuts. But then Hell in a Cell,
you
put a $15,000 cell, which I don't know how much it costs, but it's got to be like 10 to 15 grand. Yeah. And you know, for two matches for one night, and you could use that maybe for, you know, AJ Styles' pyro or Becky Lynch's, you know, entrances. I don't know. To me, it just, I can go without a Hell in a Cell. You know, I really could. You know, it's like
what we talk about with triple threats and things of that nature. They have to have special moments. But again, a lot of people look at us and say, oh, you always want your special moments. But again, they have to have reasoning behind them. It's very easy to say, oh, let's put Hell in a Cell in now. That'll solve the issue and make this ramp this up even more. No, I think if your storyline's good, you don't really need that prop to make it better. But
Does a Shane Kevin Owens match Megan in the top 5 of Hell in a Cells all time?
No.
Top 10?
Top 10, probably. But no. Again, it's hard to top Shawn Michaels and Undertaker.
That's
that
the
was,
best one.
That was
the second
best
one to me was Mankind and Undertaker.
Yeah. But look at what it took for Mankind to even get mentioned that. So he had to be thrown off the cage,
and
literally.
The third one to me would be Undertaker and Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
I think those would be a top 3. Does Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon do it? You never know. Maybe in the future, down the road, it's a top 5, but I think it'll be in the top 10 for years to come.
Well, they'll be part of history regardless, because not many people have been in Hell in a Cell matches, so they'll be part of that genre in a sense. But yeah, in terms of top 5, not really. There have been just so many more better ones. And how can you top the original? You know, for example, everybody wants to talk about ladder matches too. The original ladder match that everybody always remembers is WrestleMania 10, Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon. So, you know, that's always the measuring bar, the measuring stick. I'm not talking about Sheamus and Cesaro here.
And where did that happen? Bad Blood. It was nearly 20 years ago, the first ever Hell in a Cell
match.
Remember
the intro? So ominous and scary. Because you didn't know what to expect. You'd never seen it before, ever.
And
so that's what was so made it so special.
And it was also the debut of Kane. Kane,
yes.
20 years ago, too, just last week, with the whole talking about Bad Blood and Hell in a Cell.
Yeah.
That's the first ever matchup between Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, in Hell in a Cell. And the debut of Kane. So that was probably one of the most important pay-per-views of all time, Bad Blood, and it was 20 years ago. I feel old.
You don't have to tell me, Jeff.
I've been a fan for so long.
Yes, and we're not stopping anytime soon, as difficult as it is sometimes to watch it. But
you know what?
What a great time that was.
There is somebody else who's been a fan just as long as we have, and that's Nolan Harris, our guest this week on the High Spot Podcast. He is the co-owner of Over the Line Art. And man, just go on Instagram, go on his website, check out just this guy's amazing talent.
Definitely.
He's drawn Hulk Hogan, Kevin Owens, Sting, Ric Flair, anyone you can think of, he's done. Randy Orton, John Cena. It just goes on and on and on. And The Rock. So, I mean, mm-hmm. I can just spew out names. But listen, you want to hear from me. You want to hear from Nolan Harris. And again, he is caricature artist extraordinaire, and he joins in the High Spot podcast. We're going to talk about how he got started, how he got started being a WWE fan, and just in general, just the artwork of doing characters and how successful he's been all the way in Seattle, Washington. So without further ado, here is our guest this week on the High Spot podcast, Mr. Nolan Harris. All right, Trendsetter, we got a great guest for you today. I always like to think outside the box, and when I do, I always get guests like this, and this guy is very talented, and when I came upon his artwork, I was like, wow, we got to get him on, especially when it comes to WWE. He really likes to draw a lot of different characters for the WWE, and you've got Kevin Owens, Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, Sting, Randy Orton. It goes on and on and on, and we are very lucky to have him on the High Spot podcast here today. Nolan Harris from Over the Line Art in Seattle, Washington, all the way in Seattle, Washington. How are you doing, Nolan?
I am great. It is actually sunny today, so life is good, brother.
Oh, no cloudy, so no thoughts of suicide in Seattle today.
No, not today. Not today. That's usually 5 out of the 7 days of the week. Today's one of the good ones.
So, Nolan, how's everything, man? What actually, first of all, you're an amazing talent. What got you to wanting to draw? Like, what age were you like, wow, this is something that I'm, first of all, talented in and I want to do?
You know, when I was younger, I always watched animation and read comic books. So those were, like, heavily influential in what made me decide to become an artist. And what better transition from comics to wrestling then, you know, I mean, they're pretty much one and the same. If you think about it, it's wrestlers are over the top superheroes and supervillains, but in real life. So I kind of saw it as a nice, perfect transition from drawing comic book style and then just kind of integrating it into wrestlers, because it's just a natural transition.
It's definitely a natural transition. Nolan, were you a Marvel DC guy? What was your favorite comic book?
I'm one of those weirdos that likes everything. Is that bad?
It's kind of like being a sports fan. Say, oh, I like both teams. You know, you have to have a favorite in some way, don't you?
Okay, I am more prone to read DC comics.
There you go.
I do dabble in Marvel. As far as DC is concerned, they are balls deep in their rebirth, which is a really cool storyline where they're getting back to the basics. So I'm really digging their Superman. I'm really digging what they're doing with Batman right now. It's really good stuff. But as far as Marvel's concerned, I've always been an X-Men and Spidey kind of guy.
Nice. Do you think DC's trying to catch up to Marvel, what they're doing now? I mean, you look at the Avengers, Iron Man, all that stuff. Do you think right now what they're doing with Justice League, they're trying to catch up to what Marvel's doing?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think the comics right now are above and beyond what Marvel's offering at the moment. Marvel's had a lot of snafus with their characters and their storylines, so I think DC, as far as the comics are concerned, are doing great. Now, the movies, on the other hand, Marvel had a hell of a head start. Let's be honest.
Oh, they did. It's apples and oranges.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I said it's apples and oranges.
It is. It's apples and oranges, and I think you give DC a few more years to really establish their universe. They might dazzle some people. I think they got off to a pretty bad start with Batman versus Superman, but we don't need to get into that.
Well, actually, it's my next question. I wanted to get your thoughts because Brian had seen it, and I have a crazy schedule, so I was like, this is definitely something that I want to see at the movie theater. I didn't get a chance to, and then I go, you know, it's available, and then Brian goes, don't waste your time. It really is not something you're going to like. I had high hopes for it. What did you think?
I was sorely let down. It was just too many. I think there were just too many cooks in the kitchen. It was a convoluted story, way too dark. And to be frank with you, a lot of the characters, it just wasn't true to the actual core of the characters from the comic books. They tried to make everyone Batman.
Exactly. And even in my opinion, and I want to get your take on this too, because everybody has a voice in this opinion. What was your thought on Ben Affleck's performance? Because when I saw it, I tried to give it everything I could. I tried to go with a blank slate. You know what? Yeah, despite Daredevil and the misery that was, the train wreck that Daredevil was, I'm going to try to give Ben Affleck the benefit of the doubt. I went in there, and I just couldn't see Bruce Wayne. I just saw Ben Affleck. Were you the same way?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to go in when you have such an established actor, especially such a polarizing actor. You know, people either love him or they hate him.
Or they love to hate him.
I love him.
So, is he done now? Is he no longer going to do the Batman? Or was
Oh man, it's all speculation. Yeah, I honestly have no clue. DC's doing all kinds of crazy stuff right now, so I'm one of those guys where, you know, I take everything with a grain of salt when I read it online. You guys are wrestling fans, you know how the news sites are. I don't I prefer to just wait until everything's confirmed and I try not to speculate too much.
Nolan, if there's a now I won't say comic book, but for example like an animated series from when we were growing up. And we don't want to update ourselves. What would you make a movie out of? Me and Brian have always gone back and forth. You know, we were huge fans of He-Man. And I was always thinking, man, what is up with not making like a Thundercats? Like your right? thoughts.
You know, I'll tell you what, man. Like Thundercats would be a badass movie in the right hands. But, you know, I don't know. They've tried to do other properties. Like let's say the Power Rangers movie that just came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound like they really nailed that, does it?
Brian liked it more than I did.
I only liked it from the standpoint, though. I see where you're going with this, Nolan, but I only liked it from the standpoint because finally, unlike watching the TV series, we got to see these characters establish themselves a little bit more. There's a little bit more in depth of their characters than we originally thought.
Yeah, I just feel like Hollywood has such a hard time adapting anything that used to be an animated series and anything that is a video game. I just feel like they have a lot of issues or problems with translating it onto film. I don't know what's up with that. I honestly don't know. Maybe the writers, the directors aren't really privy to the source material. I have no clue, but I would love to see a Thundercats movie. That would be so badass.
Could you imagine Nolan doing a caricature of Lionel? Holy crap. Wow.
That'd be badass.
Guys, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. I like drawing wrestlers right now. Maybe Lionel in a few years. We'll see.
That's an idea now that you can find in your head, though. But, you know, pretty interesting comparison that Jeff just put out there. You know, I mean, you talked about how, like, it's difficult for those movies that have been video games or comic books to transition themselves to the general audience. Because when you really look at it, when you look at Hollywood or these big, huge production companies, what they're trying to do is they're trying to obviously please the diehard, hardcore fans. And they're trying to please the general audience because they want them to be involved in it as well and somewhat relate to it. Whether we're talking about Power Rangers, talking about DC, Marvel, whatever you want to call it. The same rule kind of applies in wrestling too, right? Don't you always see there's that constant battle where, you know, you as a wrestling fan, you're like, oh, why can't they just showcase the wrestling? That's all we want to see. And ultimately, that's not what everybody wants too. Do you still kind of see that constant battle back and forth between pleasing the die hardcores and pleasing the general audience that are paying, you know, tickets to watch sports entertainment?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And I've been a lifelong wrestling. Dating all the way back to the 80s. And one thing I found is that WWE is so good with the ebb and flow of changing viewing patterns. But you know, they got sponsors, man. They have these big dollar, you know, investors that they have to make happy. And unfortunately, you know, just having wrestling for 2-3 hours straight isn't going to bring in those viewers. They need compelling stories and compelling characters. And there are a lot of compelling stories and characters, not stories per se, but I think WWE's done such a good job making that work. And I don't know, you guys watch Raw and SmackDown, you guys see where they have the storyline that's trying to appeal to the hardcore fan, and then they have the storylines that appeal to the kids. You know, they try to mishmash it, so hopefully there's enough for everyone where you can actually watch a whole show and still enjoy it.
Yeah, no, there's so many angles where, like, the diehard wrestling fan gets into. And, of course, now with wrestling everywhere, what I've noticed, Nolan, is that since me and Brian have done the podcast, is that, you know, there's wrestling everywhere. It's not just WWE. So, you know, before we get into, like, the wrestling everywhere, when you were young, like, what was the wrestler? Who exactly did you, you know, like a lot that you were like, wow, this is why I get into wrestling? Who was, like, your character?
Oh, Hogan was my gateway. I mean, he was the gateway for so many. So, I mean, I got into wrestling in 87.
Oh, so, right during Hulkamania right there.
Yeah, oh, at the precipice of Hulkamania, you know, and I saw Suburban Commando in theaters, man.
God bless you. God bless you. You know, I told my parents, like, I would whine and just get into the head, like, I need to see No Holds Barred. I can't wait another day. I need to see No Holds Barred. That to me was a very it should have been top five as an Oscar nominated movie that year.
Dude, yeah, with lines like Dookie. I mean,
please. I mean,
free. Oh man, it's powerful.
You know those AFI quotes that they throw out, those top 100? How is that not that is top cinematic quotes of all time?
It's bullshit, I tell you. It's bullshit. It'd be kill me now, kill me I'm here from Predator, and then you should have Dookie.
What's that smell?
Yeah, probably one of the best lines from that movie, but not one of the best scenes. But yeah, you know, it just shows you right now how No Holds Barred withstands the test of time, because other people want to bash it, they still will sit down and watch it and talk about how bad it is.
Cult film now.
It's a cult following, basically.
For sure, absolutely. I mean, you guys, you know, fellow podcast, How Did This Get Made did an amazing episode about No Holds Barred where they just rip it to shreds, no pun intended. And it's a fantastic episode, and they just talk about the background of the movie, how the script was written. They even go into some history, and it's just absolutely hilarious.
We're talking to Nolan Harris here. We're going to get into he's so talented, man. We're going to get into his artwork and his characters. But right now, we're just three guys here talking wrestling right now. And this is why, you know, I want to get him on, because not only does he do the characters, but he also knows his wrestling. So, you know, we were talking about Hulkamania. And what was the storyline back then that you're like, oh, my God, that you were like wondering, like, you know, I'm trying to avoid people telling me it's fake. But this has got to be real. Do you recall one?
Dude, I'll tell you this. It wasn't a story at all. It was my dad. My dad, he must have been having a shitty day at work or something. But I'm listening to my Disney in the Afternoon soundtrack in my room. I'm listening to the Gummy Bears, DuckTales, all that. Dad rolls in and tells me Santa Claus and wrestling is fake at the same time.
That's too much. That's too much to put on a kid in one single day.
Wow.
Sorry, me. Yeah, I was 14, but whatever.
I was in high school.
But, you know, I never wanted to believe it. I was willing to throw Santa Claus under the bus any day of the week and just be like, okay, yeah, bullshit, as long as I still get presents. But wrestling, I was like, no. We've been to wrestling shows. Dad, we saw Sid Vicious against The Undertaker in a casket match. There's no way this is fake. And it was just one of those things. So, yeah, it crushed my spirits a little bit. But then I realized, you know what? Fuck it. I love it. I love wrestling. It's fun. It's good stories, good athleticism, compelling characters. I still love it to this day.
Yeah, there's no question that, you know, there's a reason why Jeff and I do this podcast, because we love it as well. But, you know, there's always seemed to be a point as we grow older, unfortunately, that we go through transitions. Was there ever a point where you looked at it and stopped believing in the saying your prayers and taking your vitamins? As we all know, those are pretty strong vitamins that Hogan was taking. Was there ever a point where you're like, you know what, I need to take a step away from it for a while? Or were you always watching it?
No, I took a break. I definitely took a break. I took my break kind of came into play after WrestleMania 7.
Oh, okay.
WrestleMania 7, I took a break, and then I didn't dive back in until 14 when Stone Cold was blowing up. And then after WrestleMania 14, I was in it for the rest of the time. Just I'd hit up B-dubs to hit up all the pay-per-views and you know, back when they showed pay-per-views at Buffalo Wild Wings and all those places.
The good old days.
And So I definitely jumped off when the new generation was coming around, like when Shawn Michaels was making his way and Bret Hart was kind of big on the scene, and I didn't really dive back in until Stone Cold.
Love the Attitude Era. I think me and Brian always fall back to the Attitude Era and try to compare everything now to back then. And I think what we like about
it
is...
But you can't, though.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Right, but I guess it's not the the sex that got us. Although, you know, really didn't mind seeing Sable and her puppies.
Yeah,
and
Braun Pan's matches.
Braun Pan's matches. You know, you just think it was a norm in society that these things would happen, right? But
well, totally.
we're more into like the realism, into like the whole angle where Stone Cold and Vince McMahon, and we were like, wow, this is like, you know, I dislike my boss, and I wish I could do this to him, and this is something that I can relate to. And it just blew up, and, you know, everybody in Northeast and in the Midwest, you know, in California. Well,
back at that time, Jeff, too, to kind of put it all together. Back in that time, too, like we watched back in the 80s and 90s, we knew what was right and what was wrong. It was the good guy versus the bad guy. During the time of, you know, what you and Nolan are talking about, Stone Cold Steve Austin, there were shades of gray now. It's like basically who you wanted to be the good guy and who you wanted to be the bad guy.
It was cool to be the good guy now.
No, it was cool to be the bad guy.
Yeah, I think what made the Attitude Era so special was, you know, for so many years, people did not see Vince McMahon as the boss. And then once he revealed that he was, in fact, the owner of WWE, he kind of broke that fourth wall, and it kind of made the Stone Cold feud with McMahon, it gave it more realism, because you kind of saw that, okay, well, Vince is coming out of the shadows now, and he's owning this role as the owner, and he's going up against this guy that does not want to abide by the rules. Dude, when you can pop in your living room just as hard as an audience in Anaheim or Orlando or Chicago, that's when you know you're freaking over. And Stone Cold, man, no one was more over than that guy back in the late 90s. No one.
Not even a Bill Goldberg, probably?
Ah, man, are we going there?
Hey, I was a WWE guy. I was not a huge fan of WCW, but when you look at the comparisons of how much momentum a guy like Stone Cold Steve Austin had in WWE, if you're only going to fairly try to compare it to any movement or some type of you know, comparison of equality, it would have to be probably Goldberg, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Goldberg, the thing with Goldberg was he was supremely over with the kids. You know, which I don't know if you guys realize that, but you can go to any Toys R Us back in the day. You wouldn't see a Stone Cold poster up. You'd see a Goldberg poster. You'd see, you know, he was just so over with the kids. Here's the way I like to look at it. You can put Stone Cold up against anyone. You can put Stone Cold up against a bag of flour, and he's going to get that bag of flour over, and it's going to be an amazing storyline. You put Goldberg up against a bag of flour, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Goldberg, don't get me wrong, no hate on Goldberg, none whatsoever, but he was a product of the system. He was brought up in a number of years, and he was a fabrication to get people to watch WCW. Stone Cold was just so natural, and he'd been in the business for so many years. It sucks that people draw that comparison just because they're both bald guys with black trunks that were you know, a big draw.
Well, it was basically WCW's answer to Stone Cold, and they, you know, they did a hell of a job in finding, you know, Goldberg, and of course the streak was a huge thing. But what I loved about that time was, dude, I would come home and I'd flip on Nitro just before Raw started at 9, and you'd be able to see the competition back and forth. And then I think what was so awesome was just seeing that competition. What are they going to do? You know, when Bischoff started with the whole telling spoilers from Raw, and just that competition, what it made the product, man, it's like something that, like, you can't do it now the way it's done. You can talk about the Raw and the SmackDown split, the brands, but it's just not the same back then, and I think that's what's missing now.
Yeah, I look back on those days so fondly. I really do, because, you know, it's a lot like DC and Marvel, right? Like, you got your WWE guys, you got your WCW guys, and it was such a level playing field for so long, and I do miss that. I mean, because, like, you know, Ring of Honor's amazing, New Japan's amazing, Impact is whatever, you know, but they're trying. Like, I'm excited about the rumblings I'm hearing from Ring of Honor and New Japan. Like, I keep hearing, I don't hear the word merger, but I do hear the word that, like, they're working together far more.
Yeah, working agreement, yeah.
Yeah, they're more unified, which is really exciting to me. And it's obvious by, you know, you go to a Hot Topic and you're seeing Bullet Club shirts, you know that there's a following. I really hope that they can lock into they need to get that casual fan like WWE has. You know, that's one thing Ring of Honor, I'm sure, could work on. But then again, they got a good thing going, so more power to them. I hope good things happen with them, though.
So you talk about the Hot Topic. You talk about the Bullet Club T-shirts and the Marty Scurll Villain Club shirts. I mean, this whole Bullet Club thing has become like has a tremendous following. And then you get to the, of course, the Young Bucks and just, you know, just the minds right now in wrestling, where they kind of show you, like, oh, I don't have to go to the WWE right now. I can just stay here and set an example for everybody else that fears, like, I'm not progressing in the WWE, that I can make a living outside of it. How good do you think this is right now to be a wrestler in this time period? Because back then, you know, hey, all I could see was this guy's tapes. Oh, I could, you know, I could share it, and oh yeah, I heard about this guy. But now you just go on Twitter, go on any kind of social media, Instagram, and you know this guy. And if you can market yourself well, just like, you know, just like you are doing with your characters, because you have a tremendous following on Instagram, how good is it to be a wrestler now compared as it was to be back in the day?
I think it's great, man. I think a lot of these guys are kind of dialed in to the business aspect of it, and they're all very talented. I mean, the Young Bucks are freaking amazing, dude. I mean, I think with that being said, they are doing so well for themselves now that they don't need a WWE to make that paycheck or to get that exposure. But my fear is WWE is such a great platform to give you longevity in the long term with a fan base, with creating a character that the world can gravitate around. My fear is if guys like Young Bucks or Kenny Omega or, you know, anyone else in a Ring of Honor, my fear is 10 years from now, where are they going to be? You know, I see all of those guys being in WWE one day. I think that that's the long game for these guys.
Yeah, but now, though, if you think about it, though, unless you really want to have – let's not think about 10 years from now, because you're right. Everyone, the goal is to be you know, in WWE. But now, I mean, for the wrestlers now, unless you want to have a WrestleMania moment, which everyone talks about, right now there is really not that much of a hurry to get there, because it just seems like there's so many talent that's signed right now.
Oh, it's true, man. Look at AJ. He was like 38 when he was at his first WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And he's on fire. You know, it's weird. I was listening to Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard.
Yeah.
Great podcast. And they were talking about Macho Man, and they were talking about how Macho Man, he was seen as being this old dog, and he was only 38 when WWE was trying to transition him into being a commentator. And now you look at wrestlers that are 38 and you're like, holy shit, this guy is at the top of his game. And I think you're right. I think a lot of these younger wrestlers, they realize that if they take care of their bodies and if they keep making a name for themselves, they can have that big moment one day. It doesn't have to be now when they're 27. It could be when they're 37. And, I mean, Finn Balor's, dude's 36. I just found that out.
Yeah, I know, right? He looks like he's like 30 tops, right? But longevity.
I think if these guys just continue to take care of themselves and play the game right, I think that they can have really long, fruitful careers. I mean, it blows my mind that guys like AJ Styles are 40. He's jumping around. I can't do half of that shit, and I'm 36. You know, and I've never broken a bone. So I don't know how they do it, but it's pretty impressive, man.
Knock on wood that for you, that you'd never break a bone in your life. It's not fun. But no, you're right. In terms of longevity, it seems that seems to have changed and altered. When you look back at the 80s and 90s, now granted they're still doing more stuff. Maybe that isn't as grueling, and you know, with technology, the way it's changed, maybe they're taking care of themselves a little bit better than they were before in the past and doing the right stuff. But talking about technology, Jeff mentioned about how great it is to be a wrestler this day and age. But you know, talking about how you mentioned before, how you know the WWE is such a great platform. I understand how global it is, but wouldn't you say with social media and the way it is right now, in terms of all these this young talent coming in to promotions like Ring of Honor, New Japan Wrestling, with social media now, it just becomes so much more pivotal that if you can dominate that, you know, although the WWE is everybody's dream because they probably grew up watching it, you can have a very successful career without WWE.
Oh, absolutely. And you can have the most valuable thing of all. You can have power.
Yes.
You know, you become a wrestler in the WWE, they own your character. They own your likeness while you're there. They own all this stuff. You can only say so much on social media if you're with WWE. Whereas if you are with an indie or Ring of Honor or New Japan, you have your own voice. You can speak your mind. That's never been more apparent than the Young Bucks' recent T-shirt with the cease and desist.
Exactly.
As soon as it comes out, what are they doing? They're thinking a step ahead, and the shirts come out.
Dude, so smart. And now I'm seeing all these indie wrestlers posting pics on Twitter of them doing the two sweep in the middle of the ring. And I honestly have to applaud that, man. Like, that is using social media. That's power right there. you know, you're not going to see Finn Balor. You're not going to see, you know, the Good Brothers putting up a two sweep and saying cease and desist on their Twitter because they're employed by WWE. So yeah, I think the indie guys have so much power right now, and they have so much freedom to create their own way. And social media is such a huge part of that. I think it's amazing. It really is the future of where wrestling is going, and I hope to see more of it.
You know, and we talked about how it's good to be a wrestler now. It's also good to be a wrestling fan because not only do you have WWE. So, if, for example, we're covering wrestling and, you know, we've covered WWE. We've gone to tons of WrestleManias now, and we've covered it. And we've also actually opened up to places like Lucha Underground, to New Japan, Ring of Honor. We actually gone to independent shows just here in the tri-state area, and what we find is sometimes we're drawn to more of those, and then we come back and watch WWE, we're like, because I just watched a crazy show. So if you go locally to some place that you're like, oh, I'm never going to see that guy, you might actually end up doing it. So my thing is, too, you mentioned a podcast that you are a huge fan of, the Something to Wrestle With. So am I. I get hooked on it. Sometimes I binge listen to that show. What is it about podcasts that you look for example, like that one that you like?
I don't know, man. I'm a huge fan of, you know, wrestling's great, but the reality behind wrestling has also been very intriguing to me, you know, because we've all seen the shoot interviews, and we've all seen, you know, you always see these rivalries in the ring where you have someone cooking up a story behind the scenes for the wrestlers to perform. But what happens if there's actually a storyline behind the scenes that you haven't heard about?
Mm-hmm.
I find that to be so intriguing. I think it's so cool to hear about the history of all these mainstays of the wrestling world. And it's so cool that Bruce Pritchard has a podcast in a forum like this because he was so involved with that world. And he's still very close to a lot of those people. And it's just always really excited me to hear about that. And I enjoy podcasts where they talk about the current trends and storylines and the hot wrestlers right now. I don't know, man. It's one of those worlds where the older I get, I have a freaking daughter, I'm married, I have a house, dogs, a business, all that. I still can't stop watching the shit, man.
You're a lifer, man. And one of the things, too, that's also great about the wrestling fans is they're always loyal. You know, for example, like Hogan, he's still getting the love from those. And when he comes out, he'll get the biggest ovation because, you know what, we remember what they did. You know what I mean? Like, we have such loyal, we're just loyal, you know? Like, he said what he said, and, you know, we're allowed for second chances, but wrestling fans are definitely loyal.
Oh, yeah. I got a good Hogan story for you.
Oh, tell me, brother.
So okay, guys, so yeah, my wrestling work aside, a lot of the stuff you see on Instagram is all recent stuff, but I actually did a number of designs for Hulk Hogan's beach shop in Clearwater, Florida.
Yeah, we saw that. We were there for a WrestleMania in Orlando, so we did see the shop. Yeah,
so a lot of the shirts there were actually illustrations that I did for Hulk Hogan. Actually, not the logo of him on the shark, but the logo of him doing the full flex. That's a logo that I created for the Hulkster. So I actually had maintained communication with him and his camp, and I told them that I was going to be out in Florida for a caricature convention, and I was going to be close to Clearwater, Florida, where his first shop is. And I wanted to see if I could potentially meet up with Hogan and just shoot the breeze and meet the man. Because I'd spoken to him on the phone before, but I'd never seen him in person. So we get to the shop. We talk to the manager, and they said, hey, man, I don't know if you guys have been watching the news, but a sex tape just dropped of Hulk Hogan. And he's with his lawyers right now at the Wingstop.
Oh, man.
He doesn't
talking sex tapes and food, brother.
Dude, this is crazy. This is so surreal. It's me and my wife. And so I'm moping like a child that was just told Santa Claus isn't real. And I'm like, oh, man, now we came all this way. We're not going to see Hulk Hogan. This is heartbreaking. And so we asked the manager, please just call him, see if there's anything you can do. And this is a testament to Hulk Hogan as a man and a human being. On one of the worst days of his life, when this dropped, he came to the shop to meet me.
Wow.
He came to the shop to spend some time with my wife and myself and he had a few people that came in while we were there to say hi, and he was so cordial, and you can tell that he didn't get any sleep. You can tell he had a rough night. But he came, and he didn't have to, but he's a good dude, and I know he said some bad things, but I know that the man inside is a good human being, and I know that the fans around the world will always embrace him, and I hope nothing but the best for the Hulkster, because he's been so good to me, and I've got a weight belt that hanging on my wall autographed by him.
That's awesome.
And he's a good dude.
No, you're right. I mean, one thing, Nolan, that I'm sure a lot of people listen to this podcast and yourself will agree that the most loyal fans in the world, I don't care what sport you want to talk about, you want to talk about soccer, football, baseball, talk about people in other countries and how loyal they are to their teams or political figures, whatever, the most loyal fans you'll get in the world are wrestling fans. And they'll stick behind you no matter what you do.
You bet, and that can go both ways. I mean, the wrestlers can be just as loyal to the fans in the same token. I mean, when he reached out to me to do the work for his shirts, he knew I was just a fan that drew a caricature of him that he liked. But he was so communicative, and he was so helpful, and he was a good guy to work with. And, man, I wish I could still work with him now, especially with all that money he's got to throw around.
And, you know, like in this business, Noel, never say never, right? But my thing for you is, I mean, it's great that you got a chance to meet him. I mean, for me, like, one of my huge idols is, like, Chris Jericho, and I had a chance to meet him on several occasions, even at, you know, bumping into him at work and getting a photo taken with him. And he just comes off to be a really nice person, and it's always great to see the people you admire. And sometimes they're always like, you know, maybe you don't ever want to meet those kind of people because you can be disappointed. But it's great that Hulk Hogan didn't disappoint you. How bad were you marking out? How long did it take you to get out of that mindset when you first met Hogan?
Dude, I was marking out hardcore. like he gave me the working handshake, you know, the gentle handshake.
Yeah.
Just to make sure I wasn't going to be a stiff opponent, brother.
Exactly.
And I was like, man, this massive giant is giving me the weakest handshake I've ever had. Oh wait, I forgot. Back in the 80s, that's what they did.
Yeah.
To make sure they're stiff. But it was really cool, Mark. Now, I was telling him about some of the video, you know, some of my favorite experiences watching him back in the 80s. And he was watching a video of him and Kamala on one of the screens in the shop. And he was just, man, it was so weird but cool to see him stare at those screens and just relive those memories. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like he's hanging on to any of it. I don't think it's that at all. I think he sees that, and he just remembers such a special time in his life, and he thinks about the people in the ring with him and what they're doing. He asked me, he was like, you know, Kamala's having a tough time, right? And I'm like, yeah, I heard that. He's like, man, my heart goes out to him, brother. And it's I don't know, man, so cool. But I was marking out hardcore at the beginning. But after that, it was all good. Started joking with him. I accidentally called him Terry, which I'll never do again.
Oh, wow.
but it's all good, man. I still have his phone number in my cell phone, and every time I drink too many drinks, I'm like, man, maybe I should
drunk text brother.
Brother, yeah, trust me, he'd block me right away. He wouldn't hesitate.
So you're talking about legends like Kamala. We unfortunately recently lost Bobby the Brain Heenan. Ric Flair gave us a scare. Damn it! Luckily, he kicked out at 2.5. Your thoughts on Bobby the Brain Heenan? Listen, to me, there's no question he was the best manager of all time.
Oh, for sure, man. He was the first heel that I truly hated as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was like, man, I hate this guy's guts. I don't know what it is about him, but I can't stand him. He's so freaking annoying. He's such a pest. He's such a weasel. And I was so furious about him, and I would look at wrestlers that were supposed to be bad guys, and I'd be like, well, you know, I know he's bad, but I'm sure he's not that bad. But with Heenan, he freaking sold it, man. I didn't realize until I was older, oh, wait, I was supposed to hate him because he was doing his job so damn well.
And how about Rick, though? Luckily, you know, he's up and about, and now he's doing much better. But your thoughts on Ric Flair?
Oh, man, that was pretty scary, huh? Yeah, I'm so happy he's doing better. He's know, he's such a great ambassador for the business. He's got such a good spirit, and there's never, I mean, there's so many great stories about Flair. I don't know, man. The day he leaves us, man, that's going to be a really, really sad day. I'm going to be wooing for a week, and that not in a good way.
How about the documentary that's coming out? I don't know how you're going to be able to get all of Ric Flair's story bottled up in less than 90 minutes. I'm looking forward to that.
Shit, half that shit you can't even put in the documentary.
Long overdue, though. Thank God that's finally coming out, and he's going to be around to see it. So that's a great thing, too.
Yeah, and I just recently saw that him and his daughter put out a book.
Mm-hmm. Second Nature,
I might actually grab that bad boy and give it a read. Ric Flair is such a fantastic character because he is, in real life, who he is in the ring. And there are very few people that are like that. I mean, John Cena doesn't walk around in public wearing jorts and ball caps, although those suits he wears aren't much better. But Ric Flair was Ric Flair 24/7, baby. That's how he rolled.
Yes, that's definitely how he rolled. And it all catches up to you eventually in the end. But luckily, like Jeff said, he was able to kick out 2.5. And we had spoken last week about having such a better support system. Maybe the guy just finally gets it. Maybe you don't need to do any more Nature. Now you can just kind of enjoy his life and not worrying so much about having to be Ric Flair. But something I want to talk to you about, Nolan, is I guess it's a quick two-parter, was you had mentioned before how you enjoyed the transition of being a fan, but also not just watching the product that you see out there on TV or you see there on a live event, but enjoying the behind-the-scenes type of thing. And Jeff and I watch, you know, all the specials on the network, free plug there, of, you know, WrestleMania and all the work that goes into producing the show and storylines and talent speaking to one another of what they're going to do and how they're going to accomplish a certain match. And to me, I find that so much more intriguing and so much more exciting than whoever comes out the winner. I really don't care who wins and loses anymore. I just want to see that. So at what point did you start liking the behind-the-scenes type of thing? And speaking about Hogan and how he looked at a caricature that you did and admired it, have there been anybody else in terms of WWE superstars or people on the indie circuit right now that have looked at your characters and say, hey, I'd actually like you to do one of mine?
Yeah, I've had a lot of retweets or reposts from wrestlers, and it really hasn't gotten into, because a lot of the wrestlers that I draw work for WWE, so that's kind of out of their hands.
Mm-hmm.
WWE has a dedicated design team that works on a lot of their shirts, or they partner with other design firms to work on shirts. They very rarely go out of the box and just grab some illustrator willy-nilly to do stuff for them. But I've gotten a lot of love from Y2J. He's one of those guys that's reposted my stuff a few times.
Nice.
And so he's been great. He's fantastic. Sugar Shane Helms, the Hurricane, he actually started following me on Instagram and would just randomly comment on my drawings.
Really?
You know, with a hint, you know, hey, you want to draw Hurricane, baby? What's up with that? You know?
Yeah.
I finally drew Shane yesterday, and he just did a repost of it to show it off. Other wrestlers that have shown off my stuff, Sheamus, he's a fan. Oh God, I'm trying to think now. Oh, Edge, did a retweet. Quite a few of the guys enjoy this stuff. I mainly just want to get eyes on it. You know, I want to enjoy it. I want the wrestlers to enjoy it. Yes. It would be a dream of mine to produce shirts for WWE.
But you know, the good part about that is now, like we were talking about the wrestlers, you really don't have to go to WWE. Now I'm pretty sure that, you know, you get in contact with, I know Bullet Club has their own thing, but like, you know, you get any successful indie wrestler and you could go places. So that dream could still be a possibility. So, you know, especially with what I'm looking at it on Instagram, like the talent's there, and like it's just awesome. So I feel like that door is far from closed.
There are a lot of talents out there in the indie world, but here's the thing: I'm a businessman, baby.
Well,
I had a conversation with Pro Wrestling Tees, and they have a lot of talented artists that work with them, and they produce amazing work. But a lot of the work they do is pro bono, and I'm a fan, but I got a mortgage, man.
I gotcha. So yeah,
but it's great. I really enjoyed the exposure. The wrestlers are fantastic.
So here's a question now. You started the company Over the Line Art in Seattle, Washington. How long have you started that up? How long have you had that business?
So it's been around for 10 years now out here in Seattle. I started up with my best friend. His name's Dexter Rothschild. He's a fellow caricature artist and very talented guy. And we started up as just the two of us. And here's how our business works. We've got two caricature stands that are open every day during the summer. One's at the Space Needle and one's at the beautiful Seattle waterfront. And then we also do 40 fairs and festivals throughout the year with our team of artists. We have 16 artists that work for us, and they're all amazing in their own right. And then we also entertain at special events and corporate functions. So we're an agency for artists as well. So we entertain for Microsoft, Google, Amazon, Adobe, all these different companies, and we have a great time. So we've done a lot in the past 10 years to grow the business, and we're going to continue to grow onward, as well as offer caricatures nationwide, which if you go to our website, otlart.com, you could book a caricature artist through us for anywhere in the country.
Oh, that is awesome. And, a lot of people kind of like when it's something they see that looks too hard, they won't do it. But quite honestly, do you think that anybody, if they're dedicated enough, can learn the art of not just caricatures, but just drawing?
You know, you guys have heard the thing about left brain, right brain, right?
Yeah.
So I think there are a lot of folks out there that are very analytical, and those folks might have problems or trouble trying to learn the art form. But people that aren't as analytical, with enough practice and discipline, I think they could learn it to a certain extent. So to say no, not anybody can learn it would be unfair, but what I put out there is the product of over three decades of practice. And if someone were to decide to try and pick it up now, unless there's some idiot savant, take them 30 years to get as good. And so, yes, you can learn it, but it ain't going to take you a year. It ain't going to take you 2 years. It's going to take you a long time to get good.
So you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance, yeah. Hey, if there's a will, there's a way.
You know, the funny thing is about Nolan is that what I also wanted to ask him, too, is so basically, listen, you ain't going to put one over on Nolan because he's got 30-plus years, and if you're going to start it now, good luck with that. So, obviously, Nolan, you're very, very talented, but one thing that caught my attention, and I was talking to Brian beforehand, is, like, it said in your bio that you're originally from Cincinnati, Ohio, right? So,
Yeah, so
you would actually do the caricatures from the King's Island. And me and Brian, well, me being more of a pop guy, did you ever happen to run into 90 Degrees doing their thing in there?
No, but I did run one of those guys at the food court at the mall.
Oh, really?
Which one?
Oh, God.
Lachey?
Well, listen, man, you expect me to know all their names? I listen to Metallica and Avenged Sevenfold. I don't know much of 98 Degrees.
Okay.
I do remember seeing one of them at the mall food court, though, and he was getting all up in that Bayou kitchen.
Must have been Nick Lachey, then.
It's probably Nick Lachey. But
this is before the Jessica there, Simpson.
Yeah. So why the move to Seattle? Was it just a different venture? Was it just more opportunity over there? What was the sudden change to Seattle?
So like I said, my business partner, his name's Dexter Rothschild. He had moved out here a couple years prior to me, and he saw that there was a really big market for what we do, but not a lot of big demand, but not a lot of people that could make it happen. So he knew my business acumen. He knew I could really help him grow the business. So we decided to tag team at 50-50. I moved out here, and we started our expansion strategy. And I'm really glad we did because Amazon recently moved in and there's a lot of business to go around. So it's been a great time. And but you know what? Cincinnati, here's the thing. It's an amazing place, but economically it's not where I would like for it to be for an artist. Whereas out here on the West Coast, Pacific Northwest, there's lots of opportunities for a guy like me.
That's great. Opportunities that no one has tried and has succeeded in, as you can tell from all the work that he does. And it's greatly appreciated by us, Nolan, because we always like having people on the show. And, you know, it's one thing about doing something you're passionate about, right? And the old adage is, you know, do something you love, never work a day in your life. But there's something about doing it, of saying it and actually doing it, and you've done it yourself too and have been quite successful at it, and we wish you nothing but most success, because the guys like Jeff and I, we admire that very much from you, Nolan, and really appreciate all the hard work you do.
Yeah, much respect, Nolan. Much respect. I mean, you're living the dream.
Well, I really appreciate the kind words. If I may, to all the artists out there, just remember, you get what you put into it, and if you put everything you've got into art, you can make a name for yourself, but you have to put the time in. You know, I have a full-time job. I've got a kid, I've got a wife, I've got all these responsibilities, but I got to make that 2 hours every day to draw. And if that means I lose a couple hours of sleep, so be it. So make it happen, guys. You can pave your own way.
Hey,
and
awesome.
Nolan, real quick, favorite wrestler currently right now?
Oh, Kevin Owens, without a doubt.
There you go.
Yeah, I can see. I can see he loves the when you do the artwork. You have one of him that you were sketching out with of him just like raging. So I think, obviously Kevin Owens is just so right now the best heel on SmackDown. And basically, right now he's like the only story on SmackDown.
Pretty much, and I tell you what, he's the full deal. He's the full package. I see nothing but big things for the guy. And come on. If I can just what he did with Jericho last year was gold.
It's amazing. The whole Festival of Friendship. Just those two working together. I mean, you talked about Jericho, another great mind. The two have just a great mind for the business and a great way of being able to transition storylines for us, the audience, to be invested in. Those two do a great job.
Oh, absolutely. Jericho, the greatest of all time, man. That guy can do no wrong. And I hope you guys are at least considering going on his cruise. At the end of the month.
We're considering it. We're working it. We're saving the pennies right now in the jar.
Yeah, no, but definitely something that we were talking about actually a few days ago. It's a must do with not only that, but the podcasting is going to be there. The Sea of Honor that they're going to do. The bands Fozzy's going to be performing. It just seems like so much fun. And if Jericho's behind it, he's going to give it 100%.
Oh, absolutely, and hopefully you guys do have an opportunity to check it out, because I would love to hear your podcast rundown. I think that'd be awesome.
Awesome. But Nolan, listen, you have something to wrestle with. That's got to be number one. But if you can put us in your top five and give us a listen, we definitely enjoy it. We enjoyed this interview. What do you have coming up in the future as far as events, anything that you have? Because you said you do a lot of conventions. Anything in the near future?
Yeah, so I've got a promotion going on right now where I am offering to draw your face on a pre-drawn superhero or supervillain body. I've got 24 to choose from. You can be Superman, you can be Green Lantern, you can be Thanos, whoever.
I'm Batman. I have already drawn. I'm Batman.
You can be Batman.
Yes.
And here's the deal with that promotion. It's only $45 plus tax to get a drawing. It's a digital drawing. And 50% of the proceeds from those drawings are going to go to UNICEF Puerto Rico Relief for the hurricane. So
great
if
cause.
You go to my Instagram, Nolanium, Nolanium, just DM me and we will make it happen.
Hey, listen, Nolan, thank you so much for making this interview happen. The best of luck to you. Don't be a stranger. Anytime you want to get some wrestling off your chest, anything that's bothering you, let us know here on the High Spot Podcast. We'd love to have you back.
Oh, thanks, boys. It was great being on here. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. We'll talk soon, man. Thanks a lot.
Easy.
All right, thanks goes out to Nolan Harris, character artist extraordinaire. Dude, man, he's got such a passion. And it's just funny, we talk about everything, and we started talking about Justice League, and we started talking about Batman and Superman. So he's just very diverse in so many things. And again, guys, check out his Instagram. Tons of great art, tons of great art on there. So looking forward to ordering, maybe having him do a character for me and you.
That'd be hilarious. And you guys will definitely catch that on our Instagram if we do that. I actually want to. That'd be a funny thing to do because I think we're just both funny looking. But especially me with my gigantic, grotesque beard. But no, it's really exciting. What I'm passionate about, Jeff, more than anything, is just I love the amount of guests we have on the show. It's always a different dynamic. And you know what? Depending on who it is, whether it's a wrestling fan, a wrestling writer, a talent we have on the show, or something completely different, it's always entertaining because you know what? I always feel, and I've told this to you before, Jeff. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show, though, but I think wrestling is related to us all the time because in some way, shape, or form, I think everybody's always kind of watched and seen it to a degree. It's always great to get those stories.
Yes, so our thanks go out to Nolan Harrison. Of course, next week will be all WrestlePro, the sounds, and just everything that goes on in WrestlePro. It'll be a very special one, especially hearing from everyone there after the barbed wire match between Dan Moff and Pat Buck. So next week's episode will be WrestlePro dedicated. So looking forward to that, man. Also looking forward to our sponsorship that is going to go for the rest of the year with WrestlePro. Our thanks to Pat Buck for allowing us to do that. Again, they just bring out the best, and you know, man, looking forward to covering it, man.
They bring out the best, and we want to be associated with the best, Jeff.
Definitely. So the best just gravitates to the best.
Iron sharpens iron. Whatever wrestling moniker you want to use, Jeff, I am all for it. All
right, so before we end the show, I've been teasing this on our Facebook page.
We got to end the show?
No, not yet. Oh, okay. We still got a little bit. All right. But what I wanted to do is have a new segment called Book It. So basically what this is, we've talked about this pre-production, how we want to get a guest on the show and, you know, have him book a match, actually. So let's see where his creativity goes. So basically what we're going to do is, I've already thought of something that me and you are going to do. We're going to book, with all the talk about Conor McGregor supposedly in talks with WWE to make a WrestleMania appearance, I wanted to do a Book It segment where me and you book the best possibility of how to bring in Conor McGregor to lead up into WrestleMania. So that's what I really want to do. I want to make sure. I want to see what your perspective is. And the good thing about it is no one can be wrong. It's how you think you're going to book this properly. Now, when we get our guests eventually down the road, we'll have them play along. We'll pick the names out of the hat. If they're live in person, they'll do so. But we will randomly do it ourselves here on the High Spot Podcast. And now, without further ado, it is our first installment of Book It.
I respect you, Booker Man.
All right, Bri, the question goes out to you. Ooh. What if Conor McGregor signed with WWE? And the question is, book it.
Well, if he first signed with WWE, I would tell him, don't sign with WWE. They're not going to know what to do with you. Go to New Japan. Go to Ring of Honor, please.
Ha, ha, ha. Funny thing.
Okay.
Funny guy you are. Comedian here.
Can you speak in the microphone, Jeff? I'm going to mute death in my left ear. Anyway, but what I would say for him to do, or I would like to use him, of course, I would love to use him with Finn Balor. I mean, both two Irishmen. But the thing that makes the most sense right now is because they've had a history on social media, going back and forth on Twitter. You had to put him against Enzo Amore. You know, when you look at Conor McGregor shape-wise, although he's kind of similar in shape to Finn Balor, though he's in the heavyweight division, he's a cruiserweight, in my opinion. And so to work with the cruiserweight, or the ex-champion at that time, would be great, draw a lot of attention, and both can talk. And you know Conor is not afraid to talk. The only thing would be is WWE would have to somehow handcuff Conor McGregor not to use expletives on a family-rated show.
See, I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can do that.
That's the difficult thing. And how do you do that?
Yep.
So you have to be on a delay or something like that to edit all that stuff out. But at the same time, two great talkers. They're not going to back down. And Enzo is delusional to think he's in the same echelon as Conor McGregor. Makes for a great storyline.
Yeah, a lot of people are actually telling me, too, that The Miz would be also another great challenger for Conor McGregor. So that's also interesting, too, if The Miz was able to do it, too. But I'm talking about Book It. Lead us up to WrestleMania. Okay. Take the example from me. Ready?
Okay.
So all of a sudden, you find out, maybe it's pay-per-view before, that they are in talks. Then all of a sudden, he's, of course, going to go to the Raw side. So then Kurt Angle comes out with everybody, all the higher-ups in WWE, and out comes Conor McGregor with his company, with his team, and they come out, and all of a sudden, then you get Conor McGregor talking about the WWE, talking about how he has respect for Triple H, and, you know, kind of working the crowd and saying that this place, he's looking forward to making it, to being at WrestleMania, and then you hear Enzo's song come out. You hear that, and then he starts talking on the mic. Just the trash talking begins, and he goes into the ring, goes face to face, and then all of a sudden looks Conor McGregor in the face and says, "You're nothing but S-A-W-F-T, soft." And then the face to face goes, and then all of a sudden the classic kind of like the Mike Tyson, Stone Cold Steve Austin, where you start the pushing, and then you have everybody trying to stop it, and then you have the lead up, and then you have maybe Conor McGregor show up at another event, and then you just start the build, and you can have Conor McGregor. He doesn't have to be there every week. He can be there through the video screen and just continue to taunt Enzo Amore to the point where they actually have a match at WrestleMania. So you get to WrestleMania, all the talking's over, and you don't even have to have a long match because you know Enzo Amore really you know, can't work. So let's be honest. So then you have them face to face at WrestleMania, all the build, all the talk, because it's what it's going to be. It's going to be all talk. And you know that Conor McGregor can go as well. And then, of course, as it is the tradition in WWE, you put the guy over, you put the MMA guy over Enzo Amore. And then Enzo Amore can collect all that money that he's going to get. He can go into the rap business and he can be out of our hair for the rest of our lives in WWE. That's how you book it.
Okay, well, if we're going to use that analogy of booking it, I would say the only time you start bringing in Conor McGregor would be around Royal Rumble time. Kurt Angle, he's clearly going to be part of the Raw team because Raw is the A-side show. So this is the way I picture it in my mind. So you basically have Enzo Amore regain the Cruiserweight title, face all these battles where Kurt Angle is actually trying to take the title off him. You could definitely tell he's trying to make him lose. Ultimately, ends up losing at the Royal Rumble. Kurt Angle comes out to do a special announcement of a special treat we're going to have at WrestleMania in New Orleans, and all of a sudden Enzo Amore comes out feeling he's been disrespected. He's gone through every single hoop out there, and he's not even given the recognition of a rematch or found out he got screwed in the match. So he interrupts Kurt Angle, and Kurt Angle says, well, you know what, my announcement is more important than that right now. Gets very heated, and all of a sudden out comes out Conor McGregor, because that was the big announcement. Now, prior to this, what you have is people talking about or spewing the rumors, could Conor McGregor go to WWE? Conor McGregor completely denouncing those rumors, saying that it's a bunch of fakeness, it's dumb, it's idiotic, it's fake news, it's fake, it's a fake sport. And Enzo would start replying back to this Twitter comment saying, yeah, if you don't have the guts to step in the ring, just get your ass whooped by Floyd Mayweather. You
come
just
to Raw.
Didn't happen.
Yeah.
Come to Raw, I dare you. And this builds up towards Royal Rumble when he finally loses the title. So out comes Conor McGregor, face-to-face, huge epic moment at the Royal Rumble. And all of a sudden, Conor McGregor does a spinning wheel kick, whatever he wants to do, shoves down Enzo Amore, and that's the build-up. Because it can't be for a title. It has to be one-on-one. So the title would have to be off Enzo Amore. Leads up, like I said, Royal Rumble. There's certainly a couple pay-per-views there, but you don't need them all the time. It'd be similar to what Floyd Mayweather did when he faced the Big Show. The slow build-up, he'll appear on Raw on a pay-per-view prior to WrestleMania.
That's a must. That is a must.
And then finally leads up to the main event, where it's not going to be in the ring. It's actually going to be in what Ken Shamrock made famous, the Lion's Den. Enzo Amore agrees to a match, but the terms and conditions are under what Conor wants. And so all of a sudden we have an MMA fight, because, you know, he steps into the world of WWE, but he doesn't have to necessarily step into the ring because he's Conor McGregor. And so now it's actually a fight, which you could make more legitimacy, because although Enzo Amore can't work as a wrestler, he is theoretically kind of a wrestler. And Conor McGregor, you wouldn't want him taking bumps. You don't want him to train the performance or taking bumps, because, again, he is a UFC guy. He's not going to be doing that because he's too valuable to do that. A fight, quick finish, spinning wheel kick, tap out submission in about 30 or 20 seconds, and that's all you need, because the build-up and the way these guys talk will make the fight more exciting than what it actually will be at WrestleMania. And that's how you build, and that's how you book Conor McGregor and Enzo Amore.
And that was, look, we kind of see eye to eye on this one. You've gone very elaborate on it. I love it. You even got into the whole Lion's Den thing. That could be a little bit questionable, but I love the MMA, because he's not going to go to the performance.
Oh, guest referee, Ken Shamrock.
That's a good way to bring in Ken Shamrock,
yeah,
right?
Because he created the Lion's Den.
Yeah, definitely. But the only question is, you would cover the top of it, of the octagon, or how would you do it?
Because, no, the Lion's Den would look like an octagon.
Because you got to remember, it is New Orleans and it is a Superdome, so you have to make it, you know, where people can actually look through and make sure they can see. So I think they could do an MMA thing, but if they do groundwork in a ring, I think it would be fine. But you've gotten very intricate about this, and hey, it all makes sense, dude. Even booking the guest referee to a T. I would have thought maybe Austin would be a great way to get him in there involved to be the guest referee too.
Yeah, maybe.
But, you know, that'd be great. That'd be something awesome, and you could book it around that. And then the best part is Enzo Amore gets his purse. He goes into the rap business, and he gets out of everyone's hair in the WWE.
Oh, yeah, he's gone. Out of our hair. He's gone. No more. No more Enzo Amore.
What do you think? And
you know what? I'm a hate Enzo, so what you going to do about it?
Nothing. And that was Book It. Next week, we'll get the official Book It cap, and we'll pick little segments off. We might even decide during the week what exactly we're going to do. But what'd you think?
I liked it. It's very elaborate, where you really have to put our thinking caps on, which we always have. But, yeah, it's something you and I always talk about when we're just watching the shows, how we would do this, how we would do that. And it's not for us thinking that this is the right thing to do, folks. We're not giving that impression. We're just taking our perspective of what we'd want to do if we were in the situation of actually booking the talent or booking the match and say, listen, guys, here's the two athletes. Figure out what you want to do with them storyline-wise. And I think it's kind of intriguing, and we'd love to get your take on it too. So if you guys like our ideas, please comment with us at High Spot Podcast, and just let us know what you think of it. Or if you have ideas of yourself of how you would book Conor McGregor, first of all, what opponent would you have him face? And if it is Enzo Moore, for example, how would you book that matchup? How would you book the lead up to it? I think it's interesting for not only us, but for the audience and the fans to
get a little bit of fan activity.
Yeah.
With Conor McGregor possibly in talks with WWE about a WrestleMania appearance, you know, give us who your guy would be that you get him in the ring. We'll give you three choices. I'm going to say one would be definitely Enzo Amore.
You said The Miz, right?
The Miz would be two. And I got to give the Greek credit on that one because he talked about The Miz, his bud, The Miz. And then I guess number three would be Finn Balor.
Yeah.
So I think those would be the top three choices unless you guys have an other. So maybe I'll put other for
I kind of would like to see him in a stable. Say there's like a group tag match, kind of like what Stephen Amell did when he was in a tag match kind of scenario. That was going to be, I would love to see him and Finn with like Becky Lynch and Sheamus. Like, and although Sheamus doesn't like Conor McGregor, we don't know how real that is, the beef between the two of them. They have like an Irish stable there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it could go so many ways, but that was the first episode of Book It.
I respect you, Booker Man.
Very good, Jeff. I like that very much.
All right, so again, we are in WrestlePro week as we head into the barbed wire match between Dan Moff and Pat Buck. The loser will never compete in WrestlePro, so we're looking forward to being there and getting all the sounds and interviews for you guys next week. The WrestlePro post-interview recap show is going to be there for you guys, so you know what to expect. You get a lot of interviews. We'll be talking to various people there. We already have Al Snow will join us next week, so that is booked. And listen, man, want to also announce that we are part of Collar and Elbow, the Collar and Elbow brand, so looking forward to talking about that in the future.
Very exciting.
Open up the show every single time. So again, Al Snow's wrestling brand, meeting wrestling passion with street fashion, and looking forward to being a part of that. Now, if you use the promo code HighSpotPodcast, you can get 10% off your online purchase. So make sure you do that just in time for the holidays, and a lot of great stuff on that website. So looking forward to our partnership with Al Snow and Collar and Elbow brand.
The High Spot Podcast just keeps giving and giving, folks. And you've been given the gift of the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
That is.
Yes.
Awesome.
So we thank you so much, guys, for listening to the High Spot Podcast. We really enjoy doing this. Like I said, next week, all WrestlePro as well. For my tag team partner, Jeff Martin, I am the trendsetter, Brian Berg. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast as well. Our association with B Plus Player Radio Network. Thank you so much, Mark Adam Haggerty.
And the Fans Podcast. We thank you for associating with the High Spot Podcast. So looking forward to being on that show as well. So many great things, man. WrestlePro week, we will be there getting you the sights and sounds. We are the Jersey Wrecking Crew, and man, this episode was just
too sweet.